good morning, and welcome to the first kind of official technical breakout of this year's DevRelays. Now, who has been at the keynote session? Two of you. Did you enjoy it? I mean, I've seen David Chappell. I meet David Chappell quite regularly at the conferences, of course, but I haven't had a chance to sit in one of his keynotes for about 5 years or so. And today I decided that I'd like to check out how he's doing these things today. And isn't he one of the most amazing keynote speakers we have in the Microsoft space? I think he's fantastic. I wish I would be half as good as he is as a speaker. So I'm sorry, today we're in the 50% session now. I'm only not even half as good as David is, of course. Now, the only advantage I have is I can focus on a very concrete topic. He has to focus on something which is very abstract, which is out there, which, yes, it might be coming, but you can't download it right now. So that's very, very hard. The thing I'm presenting right now is something which is part of Visual Studio as you run it today. It's part of a very obscure service pack which came along with Visual Studio. As you might know, there was .NET 1, .NET 2, .NET 3, .NET 3.5, and then there was something called .NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, which actually should have been called something like .NET 3.6 or so, because it wasn't a service pack. They introduced a number of new features. Actually, today, Microsoft, when looking back, they say, well, we should have called it differently, because it wasn't very clear. So what I'm showing you today is not part of .NET 3.5, but only of 3.5 SP1. And actually, right after SP1 came along, they released these features. And right after releasing these features, they've noticed that there was a small subtle bug in one of these features. So you have to apply a post-SP1 hotfix. And you find the URL to all these things on the slide. If you don't apply this hotfix, then unfortunately, dynamic data is not going to work with the Entity Framework, which is the only reason we have given it. Okay. My name is Ingo Gamma. I work for a small consulting company called Pink Texture. Now, the thing most important for you in this slide deck might be our web address, which is pinktexture.com, because all the samples I'm going to show today and the slide decks will be available. I try to upload them at the end of the week. You can also, of course, ask me questions after this session. I'll be around all day. I've got a second session later today. Or you can always send me questions by email to ingo.rammer@pinktexture.com. Okay, so what are we talking about today? Well, to be fair, there's another advantage I have over David's presentation. I don't have to show you slide decks. In fact, there is a slide deck. You will be able to download it, but I tend to use it as a reference slide deck only. I think this might be the last or one of the very last slides you're going to see in the session. After this, we're going to look at the product in Visual Studio and how you work with the product in reality. Okay, but what is the product? It is called ASP.NET Dynamic Data. It's a very interesting beast. It's a user interface technology which is driven from the model. So basically what you do is you define or you augment your model, your data model, be it an Entity Framework model or a linked SQL model, or actually any kind of custom data model with a few additional pieces of information and let ASP.NET Dynamic Data create some kind of user interface for you. This user interface is at the beginning very, very basic, but can be extensively customized to fit your needs. And you're going to see this within the next 60 minutes. One of the main things in dynamic data is something called scaffolding. And scaffolding is this hello world feature in dynamic data. Basically, you take your data model, point dynamic data at it using just two lines of code, and it shows you a full website based around your data model. Now, that's just something which is a little bit too easy for most cases. I'm going to show you this just in a second as a starting point. But what's really interesting about dynamic data is that it's the answer to one of these problems or one of these questions which we hear from time to time since .NET 1.0 came along. And the question is, well, just to give you a little bit of context, we in our company, we help developers to go to move on to the .NET framework or to move to the current version of the .NET framework. Now, what we heard at the beginning quite often, and what we still hear is, now I'm coming from a 4GL background, some random customer or random client. We're coming from a 4GL background. Maybe we are coming from an XS background. And please tell me one thing. If this whole .NET is so nice and new, why can't it do the simple thing which even XS could? If in XS I took a text box and bound it to a database field, and my database field was limited to 30 characters, then my text box would be limited to 30 characters. And not just this, if my text box is bound to a field which in the database defines some validation logic, then yes, XS will automatically perform this validation. Now, I'm not advocating that we turn into XS developers today. I'm one of these fortunate people who haven't written XS in the past. I know some of you might have written and used XS. Now, from the real developer's point of view, I can partially say it's because I used to be a VB developer, and we were not real developers. We were not as bad as the XS developers, of course, but we were still not real developers. From a real developer's point of view, XS was, you wouldn't even go there, right? This time, why would we go there? Because it would limit you. At some point, you would hit the limit. And I'm not talking about this high-performance database engine underneath of XS. I'm just talking about hitting a limit in things you couldn't do on the UI. The whole world was turning onto COM, onto ActiveX back then. And yes, you could use some COM components in XS, but it wasn't easy. The world turned onto .NET, and boom, we're pretty much out of luck. Today, the situation is very different. We get a framework which provides a lot of these features, but first, it's not tied to a database. It's not even tied to Entity Framework. I'm going to show it to you based on Entity Framework, but just for simplicity's sake, you could use your own object model underneath. Secondly, you get a full feature set of .NET. It doesn't limit you into some kind of 4GL feature set. It provides you a number of basic features, but after this, you can use whatever you can do in ASP.NET today, just get additional support. Okay, so let's get started. What I've done here, so what I'm going to do is, I'm going to create a website here. I'm going to start with the very, very basic Hello World example. I'm going to run it not inside of the Visual Studio Development web server, but I'm going to run it inside of the Internet Information Server for a very simple reason. There is one thing which you might have to change in your web config or in IIS, depending on whether or not you use IIS 6 or IIS 7, to make it work more easily or more, let's say, customizable. But you're going to see this in a second. Okay. What I do is I just start from zero. I just go to find a new website. And one of the new websites you get, or one of the two new website types you get, are the dynamic data website and, over here, the dynamic data entities website. The difference is that the first one uses Link2SQL, and the second one uses the entity framework. As we all know, or as some of you might know, the state of Link2SQL as such is not very clear, or has not been very clear, because it's been a competing technology to the entity framework. And a few months ago, Microsoft switched their focus more towards the entity framework and went a bit away from Link2SQL. So in terms of future-proofness, I'd rather recommend to go the entity framework route. But that's not an official Microsoft recommendation, because if you ask Microsoft, then they'd say, well, Link2SQL is still there, you can use it, da-da-da-da-da. But you know what? Remoting is still there, you can use it, but nobody would. Okay. So let's create a new entity website and hit OK. What you get is the following. You get a certain directory structure, as you always do in Visual Studio. Now the important thing is these two templates, the entity, the dynamic data websites for entity and the regular dynamic data website, they only exist after you apply Service Pack 1. As I said, you have to apply this post Service Pack hot fix. Otherwise, the samples, as I showed you today, will not work. Because there's a slight bug in how they work with the entity framework when they determine foreign key relationships. Okay. There's a global ASAX generated. And other than this, if you start the application, that's how it looks at the end. But if you start the drive now, you will get an error message saying you that, well, you know, you wanted to show a dynamic data website, but first you have to define some data. So the easiest way is to start with an entity framework model. So I add a new item, and I go to radio.net entity data model over here. Who knows the entity framework? Or who has heard about what the entity framework does? Okay, that's about 50%. The entity framework, just a quick overview, because my main focus really is on dynamic data. What entity framework does is it gives you, Microsoft doesn't like to call it this way, but actually it is an object relational mapper, which is database independent, but today only implemented for SQL Server from Microsoft, and there are other implementations towards other databases, Oracle, etc., from other vendors. That's about it. But it is an object relational mapper. It tries to move your logic away from SQL. You won't see a single line of SQL here, and it will go to database. Is this good or bad? That's something I don't want to discuss or to go into here. I know it's a very religious and heated topic. I've written pro and con articles on a number of sites, and it really depends on the situation. For the things dynamic data is focusing on, an OR mapper is a wonderful thing. For a lot of high transactional systems, an OR mapper is a really bad thing. But in this case, it's okay. So I create a new data model. I call it Northwind because I use one of my favorite databases here. Not because it's the perfect example of how to create database schema, but because everybody knows how Northwind looks like, so we don't need to talk too much about the schema. Okay. It tells me that I want to add a special file type, etc., etc., and I should place it in app code, which I'm fine with. Let's place it in app code. Yes. This is the model wizard, so I just say I want to create a new model from my database. I select the database, which is Northwind in this case, and I select a few tables. Could be customers, categories, employees, orders, order detail, products. But only lead employees, we can. Products and suppliers. So we just take a subset of these tables. It then analyzes the SQL table, analyzes the relationships. So it's a good idea if you've defined your foreign key relationships correctly in the database so that dynamic data, or actually the entity framework, can derive information from. And you'll get your entity model, which would look like this. You could customize this. There are big books written on just customizing this model. So it is entity framework is a big topic. You can customize the object layer to look pretty much the way you want it to look and map it to databases. It supports inheritance and different ways of mapping object inheritance to different database tables, etc. So it's very, very complete in terms it's not fully complete. There are OR mappers which offer better features even. But it's reasonably complete. Let's say it's reasonably complete. You can do work with it. And it simplifies the work. That's the important thing. Okay, so we close this. I don't want to do any customization as of now. What I do is I want to show you dynamic data. So I open the global ASAX. And in here, you get a few commands telling you important, blah, 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 blah. You have to read all this and remember it by heart. Let me just delete this one. Whatever. I'm going to tell you, you've got live comments here. We don't need written comments. The last time I did this, I forgot one thing. I've been at the conference session just like this here. I deleted the comments, did a few things of the comments, or a few things which are described in the comments, forgot one. Now, I couldn't for the life of me figure out what I did wrong for about 5 minutes. I was like, I've done this 10 times, 15 times, I don't know. I didn't look at the exception, that's always the problem. If you've done something so often that you know that it has to work, you don't even look at the exception anymore. You would have said the exception, you would have said right away what I've done wrong. So the important thing is, look at the exception. You have to uncomment this line. That's what's said in the comment. You have to uncomment this line, because by default, if you do not uncomment this line, you would still get the information that, oh, I'm sorry, there are no tables to be shown. If you uncomment this line, you have to tell the system which kind of database or entity model you want to use. In our case, this would be Northwind entities. And after this, you have to set scaffold all tables to true just to get started. That's the point which I've forgotten. And save it, and let's run it in our web browser. Okay, so this time I haven't forgotten too much. That's the way dynamic data presents itself after you've configured. What you're getting here is you get a user interface, an automatically generated user interface based on your database schema. Well, actually based on your object model, but our object model is by virtue of ABL.NET Entity Framework based on our database. You can customize all this, it's fully CSS-based. Everything you see, every single bit you see here is customizable. You can make this look totally different. Not just in terms of CSS, but also in terms of the complete output you see. Everything here is customizable. Okay, so what you get is you get, by default, because we still set scaffold all tables, because we set this to true, we get all the tables, so you can click on whatever customers. And you get the default view. The default view, let me just zoom this a bit, is to get a list of customers. You get automatic paging down here. You can insert new items. You have the full CRUD operations right from the start. And if I go on edit, let's scroll again. I mean, that's alphabetically sorted, the fields, etc. So it's really generic. You can see that it's generic. But this is just a starting point. Customize all of this. And even the starting point, what you get is you get validation on field length. You cannot enter word types. This is derived automatically from the database. These are fields. These are things a lot of .NET developers have waited for ages. And you always say, well, why isn't there a simple support for these kind of things? We've had the information in our data sets. Why didn't they use whatever magic they are using in data binding to put these limits on? What you also get is you get fields which you cannot change. Let's say your primary key is automatically not changeable in this case. You could change it if you insert a new record, which would also be possible. If you cancel this one, go insert a new item. If we, for example, try to save it, it would do validation automatically. It would tell us that we have to enter company name and customer ID because these fields are defined as non-null fields. If we do this, we get instantaneous validation, etc., etc. So you get pretty much what you'd expect from an automatic UI framework. Still, it's not perfect, right? In the error messages are in English language. This can be this needs to be changed. You can use resource keys here to get multi-language error messages, etc., etc. But it's a nice starting point. Okay. So, what can we do with it? Well, let's say one of the things we want to do is, let me show you one thing. Because up to here, everything was nice. And that's about what you'd see from a Microsoft presentation. I have an advantage here, I'm not working for Microsoft. When I researched this topic for the very first time, I watched a few webcasts from Microsoft people, etc. And I've noticed in one of these webcasts, I've noticed that, you know, this guy is telling something, but actually on the screen, there is something which doesn't really match what he's just telling. And you know, when you're public speaking or when you're doing a webcast, there are always things which you notice during the session, and you say, you know, this doesn't look right. And then you can make a decision. You can say, well, will I just glance over it and hope that nobody ever noticed this one, or will I explain it? Now, the problem is, if you glance over it, then 2 or 5 or 10% of the audience, they are going to notice this. And they know that you are not tricking them. So I noticed this, and I said, well, if I look into customers. Well, let's look into, I think it's in products. If you look into products and scroll to the right, then there's a suppliers field here. Oh, sorry. We can sort it. I just clicked on sorting. Sorting is built in as well, of course. But if you look at suppliers, it doesn't give me the name. It gives me the address. Now, in this webcast, this Microsoft guy just went over into the ground. No problem. We haven't seen anything here. In this case, I said, well, you know, that's not the right answer because we're going to see this in every single application. So you need to know what is this foreign key, because that's a foreign key value, which value ends up being displayed in the grid as a foreign key reference. And it turns out that by default, it's the field which is on position one if you sort them alphabetically, which would be address. Which is quite likely not what you want to show in this place. You want to show, I don't know, company name. And here you go. And now you're going to see the first thing what I said when I mentioned it, it's a UI technology, which is model-driven or model-based. because you can customize your model. So let's go to our model. What is our model? Well, our model is this. Our model is the C-sharp, or C-sharp classes, which are generated from the entity framework. Now, we cannot change anything in here, obviously, because, you know, this is generated by a tool and will be lost if our tool is regenerated. So we don't touch this. Fortunately, everything's a partial class, starting with .NET 2. So what I do is I'll add a new item, I'll add a class, got a class diagram, a single class would do, and call it partials, because we put a few partial classes in here. I remove whatever is in here, and does anyone else find it funny that you always get the to-do and constructor logic here, these kind of things? It's very helpful. Oh, thank you for showing this. I didn't know this. But okay, the thing is, you can change all this. And actually, in one of my installations, I did change a lot of things because I just couldn't see them. Okay, I just copied it to the namespace, and I create a partial class. And I'm always lazy, especially in partial classes, you can get typos very easily, so I copy it all. I go to suppliers, because what we want to change is how suppliers are shown. Let me just copy this definition, and do the following. Now we have a partial class for suppliers, we can apply some attributes on top of suppliers. So let's apply an attribute which is in the namespace system.componentModel.dataAnnotations. Like most of the attributes which are used by dynamic data. So all of these attributes in there actually somehow customize the way dynamic data shows the data. And I've got one which is called displayColor. So just remove the long one, we don't really need this. Display column is enough for us. And we say the display column is company name. Save it back to our browser, refresh, and let's see what we get company name now. That's a lot better. This is model-driven UI at the end of the day, because that's just a very small part of course. But that's basically the idea behind this. If you want to change things at UI level, you actually modify them at the model level. The reason is that no matter which kind of UI you now generate, whenever you show a product, and whenever this product includes the field supplier, it will be shown in the way you configure the supplier to be shown throughout your application. So that's very important, I think. Okay, so, but it's just one thing. Let's go back to a few things. Let's say unit price. That's not the way I want unit price to be shown. I want it to have two decimals. Always. Wherever I want to show a price, I want to have two decimals. Okay, now that's interesting. I can't do this. Public, well, it will be a double unit price. If I do this and apply an attribute here, because there is an attribute called display format. But if I do this, Visual Studio correctly, I need a get. It doesn't matter because we have to remove the code anyway. Get set, and it should tell me that this is incorrect code. No idea. It's not unique, but it's not in suppliers. What I want to do, of course, is public partial class products. Products. And. Okay, I have a unit price here. It tells me you can't put a unit price here because, well, obviously, you already got our unit price. So, but the problem is there is no partial field or something, so I can't go to my existing field and apply an additional attribute. So, what they've introduced is a concept. They refer to as metadata redirection. I could, that's quite interesting, that's the whole power of dynamic data. You can go to a class products and say, metadata type is subgroups, is something different. Here we go, that's the one. Is type of, I don't know, product metadata. And then you can say, well, create, you can even create an inner class, that's the way I do it, public. You don't even have to do it public, actually. Call it product metadata. And then the metadata from the product metadata will be used to augment the existing metadata of your product. What does this mean? You can define a field, unit price, public, object. It can be object. You don't have to specify the correct type, because this would be wrong. The correct type is determined based on your entity model. Object unit price. And get set. And then you can apply additional attributes on it. So you can apply attribute called display format and specify the display format, which would be data format string is 0:0. Oh, that's too sharp. Like this. Okay. This is just a format string, so you could enter text before or after, and then this would be replaced by the current value of your field. I just want to have field 0, and I want to have it formatted in this way. And save this again, refresh. Okay, so now we have unit price formatted correctly. Whenever we show the unit price, it will be shown in this particular way. Yes, please.
How do you get to the European
decimal?
How do you get to the European decimal system?
How do I get a European decimal like I did here?
Yeah.
It's just, well, right now, this is based on the UI culture of my server. So if you let's say you have an application which you want, I don't know if you have the same decimal separator as we do in Germany here in Netherlands. Okay. So in this case, it works because my server is running it is a German server. Or it's an English language server, but I'm running it in the German culture. Now, if I want to represent the Swiss culture here, the Swiss have it differently, I could set the current UI culture for a particular user. And then you would just get it formatted in this. That's just regular format going on. In this particular case, for error messages, it's slightly different. I'm going to show you this right in a second. Okay, so, well, what else could you do? You could, in this format, you can define how null strings are handled, if you want to convert empty strings to null, if you want to use different formats in editing mode, etc., etc. So the next thing we want to do, or we might want to do, is, let's say we want to, if we look at something called unit system or reorder level. Let's say we want to place a limit on reorder level, a range limit, a validation on reorder level. And we could do this in the following way. I could go ahead and do a public object reorder level, get set, and say range. That's an attribute which is also part of system component for the data annotations. And I said this is in the range from 0 to 100. These attributes I'm showing here are just samples. They are nice samples. They are things which you need all the time. You have attributes like required, range, regular expression, etc., etc. But none of this is baked in the system. You can create your own attributes and which validate whatever you want. I'm going to show you this later today. This is totally flexible. You can have an attribute which checks whatever. You can run your own code later on during the rendering phase, everything is field to do whatever's necessary. Okay. No here. Not here. Now, the thing is, this whole metadata stuff can get pretty old pretty quickly. Because if you have a bigger model, you have to apply a lot of attributes, you have to create a lot of metadata types and a lot of just rewriting the same type name without getting anything wrong. So I've written a small a code generator, which basically takes your existing entity data model and generates all these dynamic data partial classes for you. That's the starting point. And to do this, I have to publish my website, because this would pre-compile the website. I'd copy the URL, and the tool will be part of the download you get on the website. Because it's really small, it's just like 20 lines of code. But I'm way too lazy to type these lines all the time. And this would be in C, dev, service 3, dynamic data, helper, bin debug, and here we go. It's a very non-user friendly thing. You have to manually enter the path up here. And there's no browse button or anything, but we get the thing done. In this directory, the build directory, which you configure under publish, you have to manually add / bin, / amp code, because that's the DLL in which your entity model will be located. Then I'll generate the code and copy this over and replace whatever we've got here with this one. Okay, that's now our baseline. These are just the metadata redirections for all the fields which have been in there, etc. Just so that we can get started more easily. Now let's get back to reorder level. And that's reorder level on products metadata. What we want to do is we want to say this is in the range of 0 to 100. And save this, and we load it. Now, our formatting is gone again, but that's okay. What I want to show you is the following. If I go on edit now, I can go to my reorder level and get instantaneous validation based on my on the information I stored in my metadata. And ranges, as I said, this is just an example. You can do whatever you want. You can totally customize it. You can customize whatever is happening here. I will show you this in a second. Now, what's interesting about dynamic data before, you see how I built the suspense here? What's interesting before I show you how to customize this, because I know that you want to know this. You want to know how to customize it. But I have to show you a bit before, because just because it's interesting. In global ASAX, I've deleted the comments and I did the registration. And after this, there was some kind of routing statement, which I haven't talked about before. And this is the definition of how your URL gets generated. Because by default, you get table name slash action name.aspx. Now, if you want to, and that's the IIS part I mentioned before, you can say, well, I don't want to have ASPX. What I actually want is I want to have just table slash action. No ASPX anymore. And you could just change this routing here, and you can then say, okay, refresh it. And the problem is, well, here is no problem on our start page, but as soon as I go to customers, you'll see that the URL it wants to go to is slash customers slash list, so it internally changes the URLs. And of course, the Internet Explorer tells me that, yo, I don't really know how to answer this request. If you do this in IIS 7, you can do this, the change in the event.config. You don't need to go in IIS console. In IIS 6, you have to do this in the console. I'm showing you how to do it in the console anyway. And this would be dynamic data demo, and there are handler mappings, and it refreshes them. There is, by default, there is no handler for no extension. So what we want to do is we want to take the regular handler for ASPX, where is it? Which would be quite like in this one. And no, I'm actually running on a 64-bit machine, so it should be good guess. No, that's not that framework 4. We don't want to run on that framework 4 yet. We want to run 3.5. This will be one. Okay, so I'm just copying the executable path here, and on the right side, I'll add a wildcard script map. So I'll add a wildcard, this is the executable, and the wildcard is everything to ASP.NET. And yep, I want to allow this. And after this, we should get our information back. And now we have a nice URL without any ASP.NET. Okay. Now if you click on one to, let's say, show the details, or let's go back to customers and show a detail of one customer, you get the URL slash customers slash detail question mark parameters. I don't like this one. What I'd like to have is, let's say, customer slash alpha key, just like this. More readable URLs, more user-friendly URLs. And to do this, you can change the routing in global ASAX. So you just go ahead and you add another route, and I'd say, I want to have a route for customer, and this should be customer ID, and the action would be details, but the action over here would not be details anymore. I just copy this because I need to revert it later on. And let's remember this one. And the action here would not be details. And over here we would have to say the table in this case is customers, because it can't derive the table from the URL anymore. Over here it could derive it from the URL. And the action is details, because it also can't derive the action from the URL. It's not part of the URL anymore. And if we go back to our homepage and go back to customers, then our detail link is now already changed to customer slash RFP. And if I click on it, I get the details for this customer. So you can change the route. That's just one of the things you can do to better integrate dynamic data with, say, your existing website. Because quite frankly, that's a lot of the use case we see of dynamic data is to say, well, we have this public-facing website. We do not want Dynamic Agent to change our public-facing website. But we do have to generate administrative back office CRUD pages, pages which just allow administrative access to data. And that's where we want to use this. But if you define a clear way of transferring an ID from here to there, it's going to make it a lot easier for your administrative person. You could change your public facing website to, if they are logged in as an administrator, they would get a link to the matching page on Dynamic Data, for example. You can even mix and match Dynamic Data with regular websites. In both ways, you can add a regular website and a hard-coded ASPX page to a Dynamic Data website, or you can add a single Dynamic Data control even to a fully finished manual ASPX site. Okay. And one more thing you can do with routing, let me just... I'll just comment them out so that you get them in the source code, is a default route which is defined at the end here. And let me just uncomment this. That's just a sample which is part of the default. And it shows a bit of the power of Dynamic Data. I go back to my home page, I go back to customers. Now I've got my old routing, but the display is different. I have a select button now, so I can select items. And if you select them, you'll see them down here, so the display is different. And if you click edit, you can edit them inline. And what I wanted to show you is the following. I go to products, I click on edit. I inline edit my product. I inline edit my reorder level, the same validation stream. Of course, because everything is still based on the same field in my model. Wherever you use this, you will get the same behavior. Okay, so, but let's switch this back to the default, and I keep this in the code for you. Okay, so let's go into customizations. Let me just see if this works. Yeah, sugar. Okay. Now, customization. Customization happens over here. When you generate the Dynamic Data website, it generates a default folder structure for you. And as I said, everything here is just default. So you can change everything. You can totally change the look and feel of this site. What you get is the following. You get a content folder which can have, or which is meant to contain static content, like images for delete buttons or something like this, if you want to have images. You can have custom pages if you want to include totally custom pages inside of the routing framework of Dynamic Data. I haven't used this so far, because you can always use a custom page just outside of Dynamic Data. Just add default1.aspx to your website and call it. And it will just run alongside Dynamic Data. The important things are these two. Field templates and page templates. Let's look at the page templates first. In the page templates, you have names like detail, edit, insert list, and list details. List details was the one I just showed you, the one where you could select and edit inline, and the rest are just the ones we've seen before. So these names, detail, edit, insert, and list, are just some defaults provided for you, and they map to the view over here, or to the action list case. So if you have an action list, and there's a list ASPX, then this will be shown. If you want to add a new action phone list where you show a different number of fields for your customers, you just add phone list ASPX, configure it differently, and it will be shown at this point in time. I'm going to come back to this later on. But that's important. There's one page. So if you look at the list page, for example, this is just a regular ASP page at the end of the day. It is, let's see if you can move this into design mode. There's a master page, of course, it uses CSS, etc. And it uses regular validators. There's no magic. This is just the ASP which you know and which you use on a daily basis. And it uses a grid view down here, etc., etc. That's just the way you would always do this. If you look at the source, you'd see how the grid view is defined. You can change everything in here. Well, as you see, they are just templates. They're just item templates. You can do whatever you want here. And the important thing is we have this. That's an entity data source. There is a parameter which automatically takes a few filters which you see later on into account, and the grid is just bound to this data source. It's just regular work the way it should be. What is important is, well, you have dynamic validators here. That's fine. They incorporate your validation logic. And if we look at
let's see, if you look at the detail, you see that they use a detail field. And by default, what they are doing here is there's a special column type called, or a special field called dynamic field. And what they do is, when the grid is created behind the scenes, or the detail view, because, which is just the same as a grid, but it only shows a single record and it shows it vertically instead of horizontally on a field-by-field basis. But let's look back at the grid, because more people, I think, are familiar with the grid. If you look at a grid, then it just has the default auto-generated column set to true. So it just auto-generated the column based on the data set. You won't see it here because it's by default. And it will show all the columns. You can customize this and going back later. But that's the magic. It will generate a dynamic field control for every single field you have. The dynamic field control is the one which does its magic. It provides the links between the metadata and the UI. Now, the dynamic field itself does not know how to represent something on the user interface. That's important. There's another set of templates for the UI. And these are the field templates. And that's the power. Here you have templates. These are the default templates for fields. Now, the important thing here is that everything is customized. Totally. Everything comes with source code. You don't even have to dig through numbers to do page documentation to find out which hook you can use. But if it just renders the default out to ASPX or ASCX, and you can just modify it. The structures are such, for each data type, you have an ASCX control, text ASCX. Text is a data type in terms of dynamic data. I'm going to go back to this in a second. And you might have an underscore edit template as well. So for integer, for example, we only have the edit template because the display template is just a regular text, which would be the fallback anyway, if there isn't a special one. And then you have datetime edit and datetime display, etc., etc. Now, the text edit, well, let's look at a text. That's the text display. That's the display control for a text. How do you display text? Well, you throw a literal in your grid. And in the ACX, in the code behind, you have to do one thing. You have to say, my main data control is literal one. That's it. Using this information, the framework behind can already behind the scenes hook up your input, your metadata information with the correct UI field, display data in a very, very flexible way. For editing, it looks similar. How do you edit the text? Well, in a text box. And yes, you can have a number of validators. So you have to do the validators manually. Dynamic data doesn't actually provide this, the range validators. But this is just, well, there's just a default which implements the range validator. But you can do whatever you want with it. And in the edit control, yep, there's a bit more now. For example, you set the max lag. So your control, column dot is very important here. Your control now has information, has access to the matching field in the model. You can get the model information. You can ask the column which field length. You can easily find this. It says what number of columns, the width of the text box, etc., etc. But these are just defaults. You can do whatever. You set up a few validators. And then you have to implement, or you can implement extract values to get the values from the text box back into the correct field. And again, you override data control. That's very simple. So let's do one thing here. Let me show you how easy this is. There is, it's still the old routing. I think it's not the routing with current solution. So let's go back to products. Back to editing the product child. You remember this one. What I want to do here is, I want to have a slider. I want to integrate an HX toolkit control here, which shows a slider. HX toolkit is something which has been developed totally independent from dynamic data. In fact, I could use Telerik's HX controls here. And so that's one very common question. I want to show a drop-down box, but I don't want to load everything in the drop-down box because there could be hundreds of thousands of entries. Can I use Telerik's HX drop-down together with dynamic data? And yes, you can. Just the same way as I'm showing you to implement a slider. Okay, so, and I have to admit, I'm not an ASP.NET HX person. I do not like the toolkit at all. There are so many reasons why I don't like this. I don't want to get into them. I'm more of the
I like to use change query. I want to know how my HTML looks like and my DOM looks like, etc. So HX2 gives really a lot to me. So I could do something very wrong here. And if you are an HX2 kit person, Microsoft HX2 kit person, you could look at this and say, he has no idea what he's doing. And you would be totally right. But that's the point. I want to show you how to implement a slider, even if you have no idea what you're doing. Okay, so let's get started. This is the opening. How do we get started? We take the integer edit as a baseline. Let's copy this. Ctrl C, Ctrl V. Rename it to integer slider edit. And open up. Over here, I've got my HX toolkit controls. And one of them should be slider somewhere. RS slider extension. No, slider. That's the one. It adds a whole lot of stuff over here. And I get my slider extender. And after a slider, if I remember this correctly, we have to place a label. The label will then be used to show the value currently displayed in the slider. The value has run at, the label has run at server is true, and the ID is LDL value. In our slider, the slider works so that it just extends a text box. You program it as if it were a text box, but a text box is hidden and the user sees the slider instead. So we say target control ID, which we of course we say here. Target control ID is the text box one. You see the nice naming conventions Microsoft uses when supplying these templates to you. And of course, it's just as I said, it's just a starting point for your own application. And the bound control would be the label. And this should be it. How do we display this? Okay. So you gotta wait for a second. I'm not going to show you this right now. I'm going to show you intermediary step before. So that you understand how the whole concept of data types works. Now let's say, because I so know that you totally want to see how this works. Okay. And it's fantastic. It's two lines of code, really. But I'm going to show you them only in 10 minutes. I will keep you in the room. Can you see it? Okay. Customers. We go to customers, and I've extended Northwind. Do you know it's interesting? Do you know how old Northwind is? Well, I don't know how old Northwind is, but Northwind has no email address in its customer database. If you've designed a system in the last 10 years, you have definitely added an email feed. So I had to change the Northwind database, to add an email feed. Because what I want to show you is not how to sort based on emails. I want to show you how to make it clickable. Because, well, we know that it's email. And dynamic data has a concept of a data type which goes way beyond regular data types. You can say, this field is, yes, it is a string in terms of .NET. In terms of database, it's a var character 50. Yep. But I know something more. I know this field is actually an email field. Whenever you display an email field, please display it the way you would. You would display an email field. Maybe make it clickable. Okay, so I go to my model first, or to the partial classes, of course, and I go to the field email. And there's an attribute called data type, which is part of dynamic data. I can do two different things. I can use an enum data type. There would already be one called email address. Or you could say, well, it's a totally different data type. I show you the second route because it's more flexible. But both of them are pretty much the same. Nothing would happen if I'd say this is an email, because nobody does anything to it yet. But basically what data type does is it tags the field as of being as having a special type. And the type is just a string or one of these anon values. Okay, so the data type is email. And let's go back to the text control. And this would be the text display control, of course. And let's provide one additional override here. And the override would be format field value. That's the override which is called by dynamic data before you display a field. And we say string value is base format field value, return value. Okay, but now we want to do something. We want to find out if the user said this is a email field, and if yes, we want to display it in a different way. So we say var attribute is metadata attributes dot of type, and let's just full screen this one, dot of type, and our type was data type attribute,
attribute, and we want to get first the default. This just checks so that the property metadata attribute is the property which gives you access to all the attributes which have been defined on your model. This can be standard attributes like we're using here, or these can be your totally own custom attributes which Dynamic 8 has never seen before. And I just say if at is not zero, that is not null, and attribute dot custom data type is email, then we do some magic, and the magic would be value is href, I never get this right in the first one, plus, oh, this would be mail2 of course, mail2 plus value plus, let's see, this works, plus value plus closing date. Looks missing. Okay, let's see this. There's only one way to find this out. You could look at it and try to find out in your head, or you could just run. I am one of these F5 type of persons, I just run. And it works. Oh, it really does. Okay, so I could click, it's not clickability. I could click on it and it would start Outlook, etc., etc., which we don't want to do right now, actually. So that's how you can get into the formatting code. The same is true for the other way around. You can change the edit control. As you've seen, the extract values is the override of the other way. Yes, correction, yes.
Can you map the types defined in the metadata to controls random bit instead of using text?
That's a pretty cool question, because that's exactly what I'm going to show you with this slide in a second. The question was, now can we map metadata parts or fields in our metadata to certain field types if we don't want to show the text entry? Yes, and that's what I'm going to show you with this slider right now. For the slider, what we have is, we have defined in products and we edit this. We want to have a slider here. And we have already created the integer slider control. Problem is, it's not shown. And of course it's not shown, because how would our slider know that we want this slider to be shown here? Now, to do this, we have to go our metadata again, to our metadata, go to reorder level, and use another attribute called UI hint. We are giving the UI a hint. We say, well, here UI, we think the best way to display this would be using the integer slider. So if you've got the integer slider, use it. If you don't, whatever, use the default, use the integer. It falls back based on the data type. If integers are available, use text, because that's our default format. But if you have an integer slider, it would be a good idea to use it. And go back to our page, fit at 5. Let's see what's happening. We've got our slider. That's something which I consider pretty cool, actually. Because it's totally done in the model. Whenever you show this, wherever you show it, if you edit it, it will be a slider. And you can slide. Now you're laughing, right? But I'm going to show you a second where you cannot slide it. If you go back to FlowLays, and I'm showing you this because we have to know. Otherwise, you think I just tricked you in the same way I talked about this Microsoft guy before. You're just, jump over it. You don't really want to look at it. I want you to look at this because you will have to do the same thing. If you go back to the routing, which I've shown you, the inline editing routing, which would be this one. And I go back to my home page, go back to products. And in products, I click on edit. Then I get a slider. Problem is, it doesn't slide correctly. It doesn't slide at all, actually. Now let me look at it. And the thing is, the reason for this is, I have no idea. But I know how to fix it. That's the important thing. As I said, I'm not an ASP.NET Ajax kind of person. What's happening here is, and if you know Ajax, it would be wonderful if you could come up to me after the session and explain what exactly is happening. But as I said, I'm more a jQuery kind of person. So with jQuery, I know what to do. Or what, in whatever frame of base, I'm jQuery, which does the sliding. Okay, now what's happening here is that behind the scenes, this grid is rendered into an update panel. And for whatever reason, maybe I've done something wrong here. Quite likely I've done something wrong because I don't know Ajax. There is no Ajax. Now this update panel interferes with my slider. So one of the things which you could do, and it's just a default Gregory, right? It's no bugging data dynamic. This might really be just a dynamic data, this might really be just a bug in my code. But what you can do, if you are the same as I am, you have no idea what ASP.NET Ajax actually
does is you could go into the list templates and simply remove the update header. And no more update header, but a working slider. So you don't have the choice. So you want update panels whenever you want the slider. Let's see the verse. So you can go into edit, and now it's got a working slider. As I said, I don't know why. I don't know what the update panel does to this toolkit control. But I know if I remove it, that it works. That's fair enough for me. And that's pretty cool again, because now you're doing inline editing, and you still get the same behavior. Okay, now back to the metadata. I'm going to show you one thing which doesn't really work out yet, and that's I set my range to 0.50. And save this again. And hit F5. Yeah, well, let's keep on edit here. And it's now 0 to 50. My validation is 0 to 50. My slider is 0 to 100, because that's the default. If I slide it over here, I get again the inline validation. You can customize, of course, how this validation is displayed. By default, it's displayed right in here. Okay, if it's here, everything's fine. If I move it over here, it's not. I want the slider to actually take this into account as well. And what I can do here is I can go into my integer slider again. This integer slider, I go here in page load and I do again a var attribute is metadata attributes type range attribute. If our metadata defines a range attribute, then I want to get the first of default. Oops, sorry. IntelliSense is outsmarting me. Nope, second time outsmarting me. First for default, that's the one. That's not it, that's a problem, right? It's a metadata problem. It's a metadata. And if the attribute is not null, which means that we do have a range attribute, what I want to do is I want to go to my slider extender one, set the minimum to whatever we've defined in here, attribute minimum, and the maximum in the same. Maximum is the same. So I just take the values from the metadata, put it into my UI, and I'm saving this. I hit F5, reset. And now I've got a slider which matches my range, which is even better than anything we had before. Okay. So I think that's pretty cool already. Now the missing point, what's the missing point? The missing point is something again which I glanced over quite easily now. And you know, I really got you. As soon as I tell you, you know that as soon as you would have went home and tried the thing with your own project, you would have noticed immediately and you would have said, ha. I think he knew it as well, and he just glanced over it. You know, something which we forgot right now is the fields are still ordered in alphabetical order, which is definitely not what you want in most applications. It might be okay for a full back office application, but it's not really nice. And there's something, and that's the only part where I'm going to use a code which I've written before, because it's a little bit, the code's a little bit longer to write. It will be too long for the remaining time. So I just add some existing code from the previous incarnation of this talk. And that's now something which is not part of dynamic data, the thing I'm showing you right now, but it shows you again the flexibility you have with dynamic data, because you can build this without changing anything in dynamic data. And, okay. Now, in ASP.NET, there is a concept which I don't know if everybody knows. Let me just switch this back to the regular editing route. Because it's easier to see, because then we can show the edit screen more nicely. Okay, so let's go back to regular routing. And okay, here we go. No, we don't need this one anymore. And I just want to show you customers. Okay, in ASP.NET, there is something which is well hidden, which I have known for a very long time. Actually, I haven't known it until I started working with dynamic data, to be fair. And that is, if you take the regular grid view, the regular .NET grid view, and you say auto-generate columns is true, then you can actually specify a column generator, something which returns to you a list of field names which should be displayed in this particular case. I didn't know this. That's part of regular ASP.NET preview. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm now creating my own column, or we call it column provider or something, and hook this up with the grid view, and then I can configure it. Now there are there's a preview for dynamic data in which you can specify column ordering or something like order one or things like this. There is a project called ASP.NET Futures or ASP.NET Dynamic Data Futures which contain this order attribute. And then it works behind the scenes automatically. But I just want to show you how you could do this manually, and actually I don't want to have it just order. I want to say, well, depending on my use case, I want to display the list of customers in different ways. I have my list of customers with the full details, and I want to show a list of customers as a phone list, which contains only the phone, contact name, and email address. And depending on the use case, I might want to use this or that. Okay, so my feed generator works on a configuration file. I'm just walking you quickly through this. It's an auto feed generator. That's the interface you have to implement. And in this interface, you have to implement the generate feed method. Generate feeds, in my case, goes through an XML configuration, figures out how do you want these feeds. The XML configuration is triggered by two input values, the name of the table and the name of the configuration, so that you can have multiple configurations by the table. For example, a configuration could look like this. And again, that's not dynamic data. That's your code. You can take this, you get this with the download, and you can do similar things or totally different things based on the same idea. I have a number of configurations here. I have one for customers, which is called complete, which has every field, and I have one for customers, which is called phone list, which only defines, five fields. The fallback is the default. And it also uses, so the ordering here is also important. And now we want to hook this up with our list. So how can we do this? Well, I can go to dynamic data page templates list. I use the page template for my regular list. I open this up in full screen again, and I do a few changes. Here we have page init and page load. The thing I want to do is something I have to do in page init, but I need access to this table feed, so I move the table up here, and then I just say grid view one dot field, no, is it column generator, is it auto cut? Here is new configuration-based, what did I call it? I can't even remember the class name. Configuration-based feature. Okay. It's in different namespace. I have to pass in the table, which would be the table. I have to pass in a configuration name, which will fill up here somewhere. Config, and I have to pass whether or not I have multi-item mode. So you can configure these feed generators, and it's just based on a sample, whether or not you have multi-item. Multi-item means you're living in a grid. And this usually means that you do not want to display long text feeds, memo feeds, or varchar max feeds. So it just passes in, and these feeds will be ignored by default, even if you pass in the star. Okay, and as a config, we just use, let's say, complete, but if request query string, and you could also do this using routing, it's just quicker if I do it right now using query string. Query string config is not null, then config is request query string config. And let's see if this works. So we go to our customer list. That's the regular list. I'm sure I've got something. Okay, but that's our regular list. And if you say ?config is phone list, we get phone list. This is the idea. Again, that's not dynamic data. That's just to show the flexibility dynamic data gives you. Because sometimes you might look at it and say, but it doesn't sort the fields, so I can't use it. And in dynamic data, it doesn't do X. So I can't use it. The cases or the number of times you have to say this are very closely approaching zero. Because there are so many things you can do. If you venture into partly obscure areas of ASP.NET, or at least obscure for me, as I haven't seen this one before, I'm not the kind of auto, the kind of person who does a lot of auto-generate columns is true in regular applications. But in this case, if you do a dynamic database, and if you do it based on a config, then it might be quite interesting. But what I think is the really cool thing about dynamic data is that you would get this. If you go into product, you'll get a slider now. And the slider is the important thing here, because this shows you the flexibility you have. That's something nobody in the dynamic data team ever thought about before, and it just works. You have just an ASCX controller which you can change and adapt to your needs. And with this, I'd like to, well, thank you for being here today with me. I hope that you enjoyed the session. I hope that I could show you a bit about dynamic data, which I think is very interesting because it's a UI framework which is totally based on the model. So no matter how often and where you're using this, or where you're using the same feed, you will get the same method. And with this, I'd like to thank you again. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope that I see you again later today. I've got another session. I think it's at 10 minutes or 20 minutes to 5. It's on something very different. It's on multi-threaded programming, and especially parallel programming in .NET 4.0. If you enjoyed this session, I try my best to make you enjoy the next one. Thank you very much.